To all cyclists of the world, this is Bike Tourist Podcast, show number 4. My name is Gabriel, and if you're new to this podcast, welcome. And if you're a regular listener, thanks for coming back. Today we're going to have a couple interesting things to talk about. Among them, we have an interview with Matthew Houston and Ryan McLean. These people did a 5,200 miles bike tour from Palo Alto, California to Pittsburgh. Matthew also has a wonderful site full of information for tourists. It is www.bikeandsea.com. Before we proceed, I have some salutations. First, I want to dedicate this show to Caroline. Thanks for your kind comments on the page. I'm sure you will find the time to do a tour. Just keep the idea on your mind and start making plans. Sometimes the opportunity appears when you less expect, but you will be ready for it. Best wishes and a big hug to your family. I also want to say hello to Carmen Rupold, who left some interesting comments on the page. Everybody make sure that you visit the page and read and make comments, just like the forum it is. This is the cyclist hang around site. Now, let's get down to business. We have here Matthew and Ryan, thanks to the magic of Skype. Bike Tourist Podcast. Okay, hello guys, how are you?
Hello.
Okay, say hello to all the Bike Tourist Podcast listeners here.
Hello to all the tourists. Gabriel, I already want to comment. Yeah. One thing you already said that is very true. Just make those plans and the opportunity will present itself one day. That was a very good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Okay. Tell people, where are you from? What do you do for a living?
Well, this is Matthew. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was working a job where I sold legal services, and I was temporarily laid off, and thus started my touring around the United States on bicycle.
Nice. Okay. Okay.
And I was actually, at the time, working in San Francisco for the same company I worked for in Pittsburgh. I'm originally from Pittsburgh. I sort of have work that sort of comes and goes. And it happened to be going around the same time that Matt was laid off. So it was a very convenient and fateful break in the action in terms of work. And we had always talked about wanting to do it. I don't know if we realized that we were serious whenever we said we were going to do it, but like you said, if you commit to it in your head, and the opportunity comes along, and we were lucky, you know?
Yeah, it's similar. I have told people what I want to do. I want to do a tour around the island, but not just around the coast. This is what everybody do. You know, I want to go through the mountains and go to all the hard places to reach to experience the panorama, the people, the all the stuff that you miss when you're going in a car. And people say you're crazy. You're going all these up these hills. You are going to be run over by some truck or something. Yeah, this might happen. Yeah, I will definitely leave my mark on the street. You know.
Literally,
you see so much more when you ride on a bike than when you do in a car.
Uh-huh.
You see so much more.
Yeah. Okay. And on that line, I read on your site that you said that this tour was a life-changing experience. Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, whenever you do something that big of an endeavor, I mean, it just opens your eyes up to so much. I mean, we were lucky enough to see so many different parts of America, parts that I have never seen, and just meet different people. And I think, I wrote a little summary about it on the website, which you're referring to. And the one big thing with me, and this is Matt speaking, mm-hmm. is that it really teaches you that, you know, no matter how hard of a situation, if you just kind of keep plugging through it, it's all worth it at the end of it. And I can't tell you, maybe Ryan could tell you how many times I would moan and complain, and you know, you're going up a hill and you're like, oh man, this is, you know, hard and whatever. But at the end of it, you know, you end up meeting somebody, or you end up, you know, on top of a mountain overlooking the most beautiful scenery you've ever seen in your life, and it just makes you really appreciate life a lot more. I mean, I can't tell you, I mean, I look at skies different now, I look at hills different now. I mean, you just approach life in a totally different manner. And once again, I mean, that's just speaking for myself.
Yeah, but basically it would be like changing the perception we normally have from what's around us. Mm-hmm. What you see on TV, what they present you, they say, this is the world, and this is, and you are constantly getting fed these things, and fed, okay, this is it, no, you go out there, it's completely different, right?
Absolutely. The only thing that I would sort of add to what Matt said is that, I mean, obviously you see the world differently, but speaking for myself, and I know Matt and I have had these conversations, that you just start to see people differently. You know, I think when you spend a lot of time with people, you know, during the daily grind, for lack of a better way to put it, you know, just sort of day to day, we take a lot of things for granted. We certainly take people for granted and whatever. But when you're in that situation, it sort of does allow you to open yourself up to some pretty amazing qualities in people. And I know I run the risk of sounding very corny here, but I sort of went into this trip, you know, a little bit jaded with people. In some ways, you know, it was almost a retreat, you know, a way to spend a lot of time seeing the countryside, seeing the world, seeing the different states, and, you know, spending a lot of time in my own head. And actually, you know, quite the opposite happens. You actually just make contact with people, and it far exceeded my expectations. People, I continually just said, I can't believe how nice people can be. And I just don't think that, you know, speaking for myself, I don't say that enough. I don't say it on a day-to-day basis. I don't say it when I'm sitting in traffic, or, you know what I mean? It, on the bike trip, it allowed me this sort of mindset to see it for how it is. And people can be very good if given the chance.
That's very good. Okay, how long you were on the road?
We were on the road. We officially started March 1st, and we ended June 17th. So it was about 3.5 months. In that time, we probably took about 15 days off, give or take. So I guess actual ride time was about 3 months.
Wow. That's okay. Now I'm going to get a little bit more on the side of family and stuff, and friends that are around you, were around you before you do this trip. Okay, I have this question now. Did everybody approve what you were going to do? Or did you have some bumps on the road?
That's a great question.
I don't think anybody, put it this way, here's the easy answer. I think everybody thought we were insane for doing it, pretty much. Obviously, you know, family supports you and everything, but anytime you tell anybody you're going to bike across the country, people just kind of look at you like, is there something wrong with you? But it's amazing, whenever you actually bike across country, then you look at those same people and say, is there something wrong for you for not have done it yourself? It's such a great experience.
Yeah.
I'll say... And I think it applies to both of us, but especially for me, that everything happens so fast. I mean, you know, Matt and I said that we would love to bike across the country, but we would just sort of say it to each other, and maybe say it to other sort of like-minded people who might be into such things. But you just say you talk about it as if it's sort of a possibility and not a reality. When it became a reality, it really was what? I mean, when did we know we were going to do it? Maybe only 2 months out?
Yeah.
When we actually committed logistically. Matt had his plane ticket to San Francisco. We talked about shipping the bikes out. It was on, and it was definitely going to happen. And there wasn't much time from the point, you know, that we knew that we were actually going to do it, and we committed to doing it, to the time we actually set out on the road. So there wasn't a lot of time for me to get a lot of feedback from people. You know, a lot of my feedback is after the fact, you know, when I sort of got back from the trip. I don't want to jump ahead, you know, here or anything like that, but that's when I started to hear more of like the reaction of, and it still was the same thing. It was, are you crazy? So now that I think about it.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on that?
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, it's just, like I said, I guess it's just the normal reaction when people, how about this? I had to cancel my gym membership, and I told the manager at the gym, and he said, what, are you crazy? And this guy's the manager of a fitness facility. You would think he would be supportive of something like that. And he asked me if I was crazy, so.
You know, we are, in all this craziness, we are overlooking probably the core of the question, which is the support of people. And yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, speaking for my immediate family,
right,
and my girlfriend, and I mean, they were so amazingly supportive of the whole thing. And what that entails is just actively staying interested in it on a day-to-day basis with phone calls and listening to the stories and asking questions. And they were just sort of truly and genuinely fascinated by the whole process. So it just sort of gave you something. It was exciting to know that people were excited by this. And Matt and I at the time had, you know, Matt has the website and then the accompanying blog with it. So people were able to follow this thing almost in real time. So that was kind of a cool thing. I would, you know, we would talk to family and friends back home and they would say, oh, you know, we don't even need to give them any backstory because they already listened to the blog and they know exactly what had happened the past couple of days. Even if I hadn't talked to them in a couple of days, they knew what was going on based on pictures and blogs and whatnot.
Yeah, I actually found that this to be a really nice idea to have this audio blog in there. Because one thing is when you write, and it is okay, you know, when you write your journal entries, and you know, recap what you did on the day, what problems, what nice things, you know, but it's just words. It's just words. But when you people can hear your enthusiasm on the road. You see this. I saw that. I did this. You know, it's different because you become part of the adventure, right?
Right. Absolutely. You know, two things I'll say to that. I can't think of a better way to say it. But the only maybe downside to that is I do like to write a lot. And because of the blog, I didn't write. I mean, we always had the blog. I also carried a micro recorder with us for maybe some more candid moments or maybe for the times you don't have phone service and you can't actually leave the blog. So I kept that. And I wrote maybe one letter on the road and a handful of postcards, and that was it. So I guess maybe I would have liked to have balanced it a little bit more and wrote a little bit more, and I didn't. But the other thing I'll say about that is this, I'm fascinated, I didn't know anything about, I had heard the term blog before, but, you know, didn't think of it in the context of the bike trip. You know, I never, you know, Matt had the website and I thought, what more do we need? And we ended up running into somebody on the road who was amazingly helpful, a guy by the name of Paul Sanchez. And he's the one who set that up for us. And it's funny because in hindsight, you know, when you do, you know, random like Google searches or something on the internet, you'll see sort of these references to Bike and Seek come up as, you know, hey, check out this sort of new technique that people are calling in, you know, on their phones. And it's fascinating to me. I guess this is sort of a newer thing. I hadn't heard anything about it, and we were just sort of following Paul's lead on that.
Yeah,
I think he had done a 10,000-mile trip sort of around the perimeter of the country. So he, you know, we sort of just did the southern tier, the southern perimeter. I guess he had done sort of the whole extension of what we had done.
Wow.
And it sounds to me like this is probably something he probably would have liked to have had. I don't think he had a blog.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So I don't know how new the this technology is. I mean, I know blogs have been around for a while, but the audio blog and this usage of it, it was great. It was a wonderful resource to have, and like you said, to capture to hear the voice is just so much different than reading words in a postcard. You know.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons I created this podcast, Because this exchange of information, you know, face to face, it's not actually face to face, voice to voice, you know, but you know what I mean. It's different that when you see a written page, you know, you get the feelings of what. Okay, I have another question. I just created this question right now, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, I asked you, did everybody approve? Now I'm going to ask. What they say after you did your adventure? What did they say?
They were still crazy.
No, I have, and my mother comes to mind because, of course, you know, as a mother, you know, there's that protective nature. My mother was the number one person who supported me the most on the trip, but thought I was the craziest for doing it, right? And to this day, she'll still say, like, I can't believe you guys did that. You know, it's, and I say that to myself as well. So that kind of seems to be the thing I get from people is people will just say, like, I can't believe you did that. Like, did you really do it? You know, and I ask myself that question sometimes because it kind of is a surreal experience. I mean, it really is, you know. And like I said, that's the number one thing that I get now is just like, man, I can't believe you did that, you know, and did you actually even do it?
You know,
Has
some people said, oh, no, maybe you got a vacation on the Caribbean and then wait 3 months. Okay, let's go back and say.
Well, you say that. Trust me, there were some bad days where I jokingly said to Matt, like, wait a minute, couldn't we just pick up take a flight over to the island somewhere, you know, and just come back 3 months later? And
you know, one thing that you just made me think of, Gabriel, is it's funny you say vacation because there were definitely people who said, oh, come on, you're biking cross country, it's a vacation. And obviously those people have never toured because, yeah, it is a vacation, but you're not laying back and relaxing at all on the vacation. It's probably the hardest amount of work I've ever done in my life, but yet the most satisfying, I will say that.
Yeah, I imagine that. Okay. You in your page, I read something, and you say, "Don't ask, I'm going to ask." What is this thing about the wrong size inner tube?
Well, I'll say this: neither of us are mechanics, but we learned a lot. You learn a lot touring on how to fix bikes.
Necessity is one hell of a teacher.
Right. One of the biggest things I learned that if you put too small of an inner tube in a bike and you try to pump it up enough to get air pressure in the tire, it pretty much sounds like a shotgun going off when it decides to bust. And we found that out and we ended up blowing out a whole sidewall of a tire, and I think we almost gave ourselves heart attacks with the noise that ended up resulting. So, to all the listeners, make sure you use the right size inner tube.
Seems like a basic.
There's a reason that inner tubes have different sizes.
Yeah, I would like to. Yeah, I would like to add to this. Yeah, I would like to add to this that make sure the valve stem is properly aligned. You know. You know what happened to me a couple of nights ago? I was training for the, you know, next Sunday is the Tour of Life. I'm going to be there representing the Bike Touring Podcast, hopefully.
Okay.
And, you know, I was doing so. I used to ride at night. And, you know, I was just getting up a hill and getting one round of the. I have a circuit where I near my house. I have some wonderful hills. So I was going up, and you know, one thing that you will find in our roads is speed bumps. You know, I don't know why. I don't know why there are so many speed bumps. Yeah. People like to ride fast here, and rolling over cyclists would be like, okay, 10 points, 25 points. Okay. Okay. So at some moment, I just got carried out. You know, climbing. That I didn't see the speed bump. I forgot completely about the speed bump, so I hit the speed bump. Boom! Oh, say, oh my, okay, nothing wrong, okay. So I did like five or more rounds around the loop. I came back home, you know, put the bicycle on the main hall, had my dinner, you know, got to the
you know, I did everything, you know, I get to the internet, see my emails, you know, check everything, you know. Then I go to bed, you know, at like 10 o'clock in the 8 p.m. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I just heard, boom! So you know, I heard some crashing noise. So we just jumped from the bed and say, oh, what was that? You know, so somebody threw a stone through the glass or something. So we just ran around the house, you know, checking everything. The kids were profoundly asleep. You know, what was that? Nothing wrong. You know, I checked the glasses, the doors, everything is right. I even went outside in my underwear to check if there's somebody around. So I came back, you know, scratching my head. Then I think about the bike. No, I just get into the bike, and the valve was completely torn off the rim. It was like a 90 degree, you know. It might happen when it hit the speed bump, it just made a little crack, and it was, you know, wounded to death. You know, it was like continuously breaking, and then at 2 o'clock in the morning, boom! And it was like, it was like 90 PSI on that tire.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think mine was an 80 PSI, I think, so probably similar shotgun bursts. It's pretty loud.
Okay, now I have another question here. Okay, how did you overcome the fear to take the plunge into this adventure?
I tell you what, speaking for myself, and I don't want this to really come across arrogantly or anything, but I don't know if there was a fear to do it. I guess in some aspects there was fear of, like,
well, I'll tell you where there was fear.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I remember when we were sitting in well, here's a good example. When we were sitting at my place in Palo Alto, you know, a couple nights before we left, you know, we would definitely just find ourselves in moments and say, like, wait, are we really going to do this? So there's sort of an excitement, but a little bit of fear there. But here is the fear I'm alluding to, is that we watched Easy Rider before we left. It was just seemed like a good sort of rally, you know, a rally call for us to do this movie, or this bike trip.
Wow.
It seemed like a good movie to watch. And watching it, there were scenes where they just show these stretches, like through the middle of the desert and, you know, mountains all around and nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. No conveniences, no place to eat, no place to drink, nothing. And Matt would just say to me, okay, now right there in that shot, where would we sleep? You know, it just hits you that, like, yeah, you're going to find yourself in situations like that. Now, granted, you can sort of, to a certain extent, plan around that. And I guess you really could. If you really want to be sort of, if you want to put a lot of time into it, which Matt and I did not do, into mapping it out, you probably could bypass any of those danger zones. But even that, you can't work out any potential problems that might happen. I mean, you best laid plans, but yet you find yourself with some bike trouble and you can't make it another 25 miles and you got to set up shop there, you know? Yeah, so, yeah. There was definitely, like, with me, there was this little, I mean, it wasn't this overwhelming fear or anxiety, but there was a concern of, like, sleeping out under the stars in the middle of a desert. I don't know, you know, what kind of creatures lurk about, you know?
Yeah.
So there was that, for me at least. And not to cut Matt off, but again, it goes back to how, for me, how quickly this whole thing unraveled. From the time we, you know, said, we're going to do this, to the time we left, it happened so fast that I think that there wasn't too much time for a lot of fear to set in. I think it was only after we got on the road that there was almost like a joke. It was almost maybe like you would almost jokingly say to each other, like, oh my God, I guess we're really doing this.
Yeah.
it's too late now. Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, you say, okay, we are here. What now?
Right. I think the whole, and once again, I'll just use this term, it's just so surreal that, I don't know, like, you don't, I can't really put it into words, like, you don't have really time to the fear never really enters in because you're just taking in the whole moment and you're just trying to make sense of the whole situation. It's a pretty weird experience. I mean, because you're biking, you're somewhere new every minute of the day.
Yeah, sensory overload right. came to mind quite a bit.
You know, so there's just so much to take in that you really don't have time to really sit there and, you know, have fear come into it. Now, I do agree with what Ryan's saying. It would be dusk or, you know, it'd start getting dark out. And sometimes fear would set in like, oh, okay, we're not really anywhere and we need to find somewhere to sleep. You know, so there was those instances. But there's just so many feelings that enter into it that, I guess I shouldn't say I was never, you know, fear never came into it because it would every now and then. But there's just so many other emotions, you know, that...
The fear is truly camouflaged in the excitement of the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, so basically it would be like the so-called fear is actually fueled the adventure.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, let's switch to a topic here.
Hmm?
Okay, what kind of bikes did you use? Because I could not find a reference. What kind of bikes?
I had a Huffy and Matt had a BMX. But we're close.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing a lot of people would see us, especially in California, there's a lot of serious bikers. And if you look at my website and see any of the pictures, I think you'll quickly realize we're not serious bikers. I ride a Trek 7200, which is just a regular hybrid entry-level Trek. I think it cost me $380 whenever I bought it. And it's not necessarily built for touring. I found that out
the hard way.
But hey, it got me from A to B eventually. So to answer the question, I just have a hybrid Trek 7200.
Okay.
And mine is a Fuji Palisade. I'm not even quite sure. Let me run down and look. It's kind of similar to Matt's, but I think mine was actually maybe even worse in the sense that it was a hybrid, but it was more geared as a mountain bike. And why I say it's worse is that, you know, we quickly learned, you know, from talking to people that things like shocks are not good to have. Things like wide tires are not good to have when you're doing 5,200 miles on the road.
Oh.
You know, there's a lot of friction on the tire. There's a lot of energy being absorbed in the shocks, both in the forks and on the seat. So, you know, we quickly learned that this was not the ideal way to do it.
So you're telling me that you use Novis actually?
Well, hold on a second. I don't know exactly what they were called, but they were sort of like a, what do they call?
They were like a hybrid tire. They were slick in the middle, but they had knobbies on the side. So, half knobbies.
It almost looks like the knobby tire that has been worn out on the center, but in fact, brand new. It looked like that because it was sort of a slick, you know, sort of center and knobby on the outside.
What brings me to the next question? How much weight were you carrying? You know, because those knobbies on the side, you know, is they're expecting just rider weight, but when you load the bike, they will actually come in contact with the street, right? How much weight were you carrying? Just a guess, estimate.
I could give you the exact. We stopped at a weigh station in Arizona. And, you know, where they weigh trucks. And so we pull in and say, hey, what the heck? You know,
we're biking across country.
Right. You know, the worst thing they could tell us is no. So we say, hey, we're biking across country, and we're curious. Myself, I probably weighed, at that time, maybe around 195 or so. With me standing on the platform with my bike, it weighed in at 300 pounds.
Wow.
So the bikes were 100 plus easily, which is, you know, really completely absurd. Another thing, you know, on the topic of equipment that we would get, I mean, hassled about. I mean, literally, anytime a cyclist would see us, we almost knew within minutes the topic was going to come up. And it usually came up when they looked down and saw, wait a minute, you guys don't have, well, how would they say it? You guys don't have the pedals, or...
We didn't have clips on our pedals. We just have regular pedals.
Oh,
we don't have
my.
any any type of strap or any type of, you know, clip-on pedal or anything of the sort.
Oh my!
And
we did everything wrong.
But you did it. You did it.
Tell us, Gabriel. These, you know, clip-on pedals. They supposedly help you. I don't know nothing about that. I don't know anything about that though. So, but yeah, we didn't even have pedals, which, in hindsight, probably wasn't a good idea. We probably would have made the trip a little bit easier with those pedals, but.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to steal Matt's thunder for a second. He came up with a great way to describe it. And admittedly, this wasn't all intentional. I mean, some of this was ignorance, at least on my end. I admit it. I had never done this before. I had never really been a serious cyclist by any means. So I was maybe a little in over my head with the bike trip, you know, deciding to go 5,200 miles around the country might have been a little ambitious. But some of it was also just a sort of outlook. An approach, in the sense that, you know, what Matt kept saying, and I think it's a wonderful way to look at it, is what did they do 30 years ago? You know, I mean, our bikes, you know, 30 years ago would have been spaceships in terms of how modern they are, you know? And people did it. There's a certain spirit about doing it that way. And the story that we always reference is we met up in New Mexico, which is some of the highest altitude that the highest altitude we saw was in Mexico, or New Mexico, I'm sorry. And we kept seeing this woman as another cyclist, and we'd see her all over the place, and she gave us the same thing about the pedals. And when she found out where we were going up by something called the cliff, the Gila Wilderness, the cliff dwellings. It's one heck of a climb. I'm sorry, it's one heck of a drop down into it, but there's no way out but to go right back up that drop. And actually, there's even quite a climb to get up to that drop. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just an amazingly difficult ride. And she pretty much flat out told us, you guys are screwed. I mean, with the load you guys are carrying and with the equipment you're riding on, you will never make it. So what her suggestion was, at the bottom of the hill, check into a motel, dump all of our gear, and take our bikes stripped down. And she said, that's going to be your only chance. Well, that's extra money to get a place, and it's whatever, it wasn't part of the plans. So we went ahead and tried it anyway, and not only did we climb up in and then drop down in, and we had a wonderful stay there, but we climbed right back out. And that spirit, it felt amazing. It really did. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit over dramatic, but yeah, that's how it felt. Like, you know, It was sort of frustrating to hear people criticize the approach, but yet we still did it, and we ended up on top of the mountain.
That's the end result, actually, what is important.
Sure.
Yeah, the end result, you know. You didn't have a clipless, not even clips on there. You did it. You went around the country. You did it, you know. Some people just get used to equipment, and if you take something that they are used to, you know, it's just, you cannot do it, but you did it. Okay.
Well, and I'll say this: all I had to do is I've had 6 surgical procedures on my knee since I got back. I'm kidding. But I did it. No. Yeah, I will definitely say, though, I'm sure everyone is right that it would have been infinitely easier to do it with the right equipment and a more streamlined approach. There's no doubt. But there is a sort of charm about this being the first time and all the ignorance and innocence that goes with it, you know?
Okay, one thing. We're going to have a little pause now, okay?
Bike Tourist Podcast.
Okay, perfect. Okay, as we were saying before, people sometimes get so, you know, it's similar in here. It's similar.
Okay.
People say, for example, you cannot do I have a mountain bike. So what? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a touring bike yet. I'm in the process of getting a recumbent. I don't know which yet. But for the moment, I have this mountain bike, and I just adapting it for touring. I know it's not the perfect machine, but still, I'm going to use it. People say you cannot do it, but that's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear. You cannot do it because this forced me to do it.
Right. I completely agree.
The way I look at it is if you got two wheels and a chain.
Yeah.
Well, gears help. Gears do help.
Yeah.
Then you can do it. You know what I mean? It's, I guess maybe it's just human nature to maybe spoil yourself and make it as easy as possible, but to me that's part of the challenge. You know what I mean? Is you're not, you don't have the ideal situations, but you can still do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I said, maybe as humans we get too caught up in making it life too easy for ourselves, you know, and spoil ourselves. So. Yeah.
Okay, one thing that impressed me on the page was the pictures. Man, these are really great pictures. What camera did you use for that?
that's a good question.
Don't tell me it's a cell phone. I won't believe it.
Now that would be amazing.
So I just bought a right before the trip. Literally, I bought a Kodak 5-megapixel camera. It's nothing high tech.
Yeah.
But I knew, you know, we were gonna have some good photo opportunities. And let me say this: neither of us are photographers. It was a brand new camera, but there were some days, or should I say, probably about 90% of the days,
sure,
where all you had to do was aim the camera right. anywhere.
That's what it looked like. You couldn't. How could you screw it up?
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I mean, it's just we would just see some of the most beautiful skies and just beautiful scenery, and you just aim the camera and click, and you'd be like, "My God, look at this picture!" You know, and it's by no means was it our doing. So, I'm not taking any of the credit on that one, Gabriel. I'm you know, giving the credit to Mother Nature.
Yeah. And I just thought to myself when I saw that picture, because when I had my camera, I don't have a digital camera. I have a regular 35mm SLR. And I just I can be walking and I just see some cloud formation on the mountains with some sunlight and some strange colors. I just see, oh, a Kodak moment. And I just take my camera, take the picture, and people say, "Oh, how did you do that?"
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that you mentioned digital versus a non-digital. I'm not going to speak to the quality, but I will say in terms of convenience, having this little digital camera, and I want to say it was like you said, like maybe like a low end, like it was probably just a really basic digital camera. But what's so great about it is that a lot of times that was our entertainment for the night. Is that, you know, there's no TVs around, so we'd sit in the tent at night and go back and look at the pictures and just crush all the batteries.
Yeah.
But it was so fun to review the past couple of days in pictures in the tent at night. It was awesome. So
yeah,
for
yeah.
That, for that, I was thankful to have a digital camera.
Yeah.
Plus, you could. I mean,
yeah, I just have my camera because I when I got married 15 years ago, I saw it. I always wanted one of these cameras, so I bought it. Now sure. I have to use it until it breaks. You know.
Yeah.
Until it breaks. Yeah, but I'm totally with digital pictures. You know, I have at my workplace. I have a digital camera. It's I think it's a Nikon Coolpix 950. It's a it's an old camera. As digital go, it's like 2.5 megapixels. But boy, you know, it takes some awesome pictures. This is what I tell people. I say it's not the megapixels. You know, megapixels are good. You know, that the more you have, you know, it's better. But the lenses is what make a camera or break it. You know, right. And this camera has some wonderful lens. It's just small lens. It's not big one, you know. And sure. Yeah, but actually, these shots of nature, and I just thought to myself, wow, if this is in a photograph, when you see it with your own eyes, it would be, we'd be gasping like, what's this, you know.
I could tell you this. I can't tell you how many times you would catch yourself looking at something and saying, is this real? Like, sometimes it would just look like a painting, or it would look like a movie set, or it would just look fake, you know, and you would catch yourself.
I really did.
You know, especially for me in the Southwest, you know, all through New Mexico, Arizona, obviously California, and even parts of Texas. There were just so many times with the sky and, you know, the different colors of the land, and you would just look at it and it just would look fake, you know, and you're just like, my lord, how lucky am I that I'm biking in this, you know what I mean? It's just amazing.
Yeah, I think this is one of the rewards of touring. This is one of the rewards, you know. This is one of the main reasons that I made this podcast, you know, because I just, you know, I do some small trips, you know, but nothing big, you know. I want to do something bigger, and reading other people's adventures, you know, I have a very vivid mind, you know. I have a really good imagination, so I basically transport to the experience of all the people when they say they tell me about some adventure. I did this, I did that, I saw this. I'm seeing it in my mind, so it's like a movie. So I just say no, I want to be part of this. I want to be part of this. And this is, you know, this views that you have on your way around this beautiful country is, you know, these are memories for a lifetime, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. I saw that you posted, we already went over that topic about the audio entries, you know. How did you just get your audio entries by calling the telephone and posting on the site? How did you do that? You know, because it's a lot of matter of technology, and some people might want to do something similar. How do you do that?
Well, I'll tell you what, it really quickly became a very fun process, and not much unlike what we're doing right now. You know, obviously, we would pretty much just call in from any phone, but 99% of the time it would be my cell phone, provided that we had service, which surprisingly, we actually had service a pretty good bit of the trip, or more than what maybe I would have expected. But where it became fun is that early on we realized that, wait, I have a speakerphone capability on my cell phone, which I'm sure most cell phones have anyway. And you just, we would almost just get to a point where it was almost like, I sort of felt like we were in a little mobile studio broadcasting, you know, because we would call in, dial in the numbers, and, you know, then you wait for the beep, and as soon as you hear that beep, you put it on speaker, and Matt and I just sort of sit back and sort of, you know, recount the day and sort of capture the conversation, you know, on the blog. And I can't say enough about it. I was just so pleasantly surprised at that. That was not planned in the trip whatsoever. And, you know, were it not for some chance encounter with, you know, like Paul Sanchez, that wouldn't have happened, you know?
And that was all set up. It was all free.
And that's a great point. It was all free.
Blogspot.com, I believe, is the website. And the only reason I don't know for sure is because, once again, Paul Sanchez set it up for us. But I believe it's just blogspot.com. And you sign up for an account.
It might be blogger.com.
Yeah.
Is it Blogger?
I think it's Blogspot.
Okay.
One of the two.
Yeah.
And literally, you just get an account, and I don't even know if there's a limit. Like, every time you leave a message, you're limited to 5 minutes. But I don't think it limits you on how many messages you can leave.
Yeah, there were days where we would leave probably 5 or 6 5-minute messages.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So, you know, literally, it's such a great convenience. It's such a great tool.
Yeah.
Like I said, you could set up an account for free. You call in, you can leave a message, and you do it all through your cell phone, you know, or any phone for that matter, you know. But most people have cell phones. You do it right through a cell phone, and like Ryan said, you hit some numbers, you leave a message, you hit another number, and it just posts automatically to the website. I mean, for anybody who's looking to tour, who's looking to capture those moments like that, it's a great, great tool.
I think so. So you did not plan that. It just came. You had the tool on your side, and then you started using it in a way you were not contemplating. Yeah, right.
How it happened is we were in Santa Barbara, California, and we're riding through a parking lot looking for something to eat. And this car comes up, and there's this guy in the car. He goes, you know, he's like, hey, are you guys touring? And we're like, yeah. And he tells his buddy, pull over. So
that was a phenomenon which I certainly did not expect. We would get that a lot. Like, there aren't a ton of tourists, how would you call that, touring cyclists out there.
Yeah.
But, man, the ones that are out there, it's a tight-knit community, and it's very infectious, you know, the experiences. And you just feel this compulsion to perpetuate it.
Yeah.
So when we run into people, like what he's talking about, Paul, I mean, they really wanted to do anything they could to help out because they know what it's like. But go ahead.
Yeah. So we met Paul at the parking lot, and he asked us what our plans were. We said, well, we were, Santa Barbara was our destination. So he says, hey, you know, I'd love to take you guys out to dinner. You can crash at my place if you'd like. So him and his roommate, Nick, they treated us to dinner that night. Then we go back to his apartment. And, you know, he started talking to us about the blog. And he said, you know, do you guys have a blog set up? And we're like, oh, well, we have a website, you know. And
what do we need a blog for?
Yeah, like Ryan said earlier, we didn't know about the benefits of a blog. So Paul was like, hey, let me, you know, get you guys an account. He linked it up to the website and everything. So
put the picture up, set it.
Yeah, yeah.
Ready
and,
to go.
And he did that all for us. And that's something, once again, I mean, there's so many times you can say on this trip that, you know, if we wouldn't have met this person or met that person, but I mean, literally, it was a matter of minutes that we could have not met Paul Sanchez, and we never would have had that blog on there. So fate intervened, I guess, you know, and we were able to run into him, and he took care of us. And once again, you know, thanks again to Paul Sanchez. I can't tell you how many times we said that on the trip.
I think we should bring him some time here, you know. Some kind of
definitely. He would like to do that, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's good. Okay,
and he once again, he's the guy, he did the 10,000 mile tour around the United States, so
yeah,
he knows a little bit about touring himself.
Okay, guys, I think I've reached to the limit of the list. Question I have for you, most of what we do now is you know, open talk. You know, I'm not going to go, you know, you didn't, in your side, you didn't want to go over that topic. I won't go in here, you know, I don't think it would be appropriate about, you know, you were talking about you find some great people. And in some places, and some specific place, you the experience changed. I'm not going to go over that, about, you know, how good people are. And then in some place, it changed. But we're going to talk about the good people. Talk to us about, you know, beside Mr. Sanchez, what are the good people you found on the road or maybe help you with problems that you had?
There was so many, and this is, I mean, we could probably take up the whole night naming the good people we met. But anytime you ask that question, I know there's a couple people that come to mind.
You have to have highlights, because the list really is endless. So.
Right. Yeah. And I'll take the honors of the first one is we reached Louisiana, and we're coming out of this diner about 7 o'clock at night or so, and this pickup truck pulls up next to us, and it's this gentleman with his son in the car, or in the truck, I'm sorry, and he says, you know, hey, where are you guys biking to? So we tell him, he says, well, that's like 25 miles away. We said, yeah, we figure we can make it. He says, well,
Like you, we do like riding at night sometimes.
Right. So, you know, we were up for the ride, and he says, well, he says, I'll tell you what, he says, you know, I live right up the road. I have a farm up there. You're more than welcome to pitch a tent if you'd like.
Wow.
So we're like, okay, I mean, this guy's pretty cool. You know, we were talking a little bit. Super, you know, pretty, seemed like a pretty good guy. So we end up going up, and here, long story short, he's a rice farmer in Louisiana. His name is Kurt Smith.
Uh-huh.
And we get to his farm, and we're talking to him for a little bit. Next thing you know, we're sitting in his living room eating pizza, drinking beer. he lets us sleep inside his house.
Which was air conditioned.
Oh, wow.
Right? Which is great.
A tourist dream.
He lets us shower. I mean, you know, and just a great, great, great guy. It's one of those people that you meet, and you feel like you've known him all your life. And the next day,
it's sad to leave.
It was hard to leave, and it was a mutual feeling. You could tell he wanted us to hang out a little bit more, and we definitely wanted to stay, you know.
I don't know what y'all are gonna do. That's what he would say. I don't know what y'all are gonna do, but you're welcome to stay. Yeah.
But you know, we kind of had to move on. But Kurt Smith, awesome guy. There's some good stories about him on the blogs, and there's some pictures about with him in Louisiana that you can see. So that was one. There's another major one I think of too.
Well, mm-hmm. I'll say real fast about Kurt Smith is that, you know, anybody who has toured through that area might actually know Kurt Smith, because he actually has a little bit of a history of offering up his, not only his house, but he has an airplane hangar. It was actually more like some sort of silo or storage. I don't know what you would call that, really. But a huge area, a huge shelter in his on his farm, and at one point he's had over a dozen cyclists there.
Yeah, all at the same time.
All at the same time. So he's very into the spirit of touring and cycling and traveling, and just a great guy. And if you get the chance to share a moment or an evening or a beer with him, I highly recommend it. He's wonderful.
I think it made it harder to leave. Okay, well, we have these shots in my hand. I'm sitting here in air conditioning. You really want to go back cycling?
Oh, yeah. No doubt. One more that I'll mention. I'll try to keep it brief, but it definitely warrants a shout out. Is we were in, and I'm sure this is who you're talking about. Is we debated on whether or not we should go through the Outer Banks when we were coming up the East Coast, and it was definitely longer.
Right.
And admittedly, by this point, we're probably at 4,000 plus or something.
Yeah.
So you're getting a little tired, and maybe your thoughts start thinking toward getting home a little bit, and that's exactly what you don't want to do. You still got 1,000 great miles to go. You shouldn't be trying to just fly through this. But there's part of you that, we sort of went back and forth, and we decided to do the Outer Banks, and what a wonderful decision, because again, if we had gone the other way, we never would have met Steve and Jean, who is this retired couple. Steve is a retired chemist.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this a beach house in Avon, on
North Carolina.
In North Carolina, on the Outer Banks, and we met them on the ferry. They saw our bikes and our stuff, and it's quite obvious that something's going on when you look at our bikes. I mean, we might as well just have garbage bags hanging. I mean, we might as well have suitcases strapped to them.
Yeah.
People can tell something's going on, and they approach us and say, "Hey, whatever." And they ask us about what we're doing, and. One thing leads to another. They tell us that their son had done a bike trip in Europe, I guess maybe the year before, like a 6-week deal or something, and people had helped him out. So, they wanted to return the favor. Good karma, send it back out into the world, And they invited us to their place. We were camping in Avon that night anyway. We had plans to set up shop in Avon, and they said, "Well, you might as well stop at our." Actually, what Steve said is, "Let me check with the boss," meaning Jean, his wife.
Yeah.
And he came back with some good news and some directions to his place, and we ended up taking one of our days off there because, once again, the next morning it was too hard to leave. On both sides, they didn't want to see us go. We certainly didn't want to go. We had made good friends. And wonderful accommodations. That was probably the one and only time on the trip that it felt like a vacation.
Yeah.
We were treated to a beach house in the Outer Banks. And not only treated to a beach house,
and for free.
Steve and Jean had like a 4 or 5 bedroom place, and they were only using the 1 bedroom upstairs, so like the whole lower level, which included a hot tub, which is great for the legs.
A hot tub.
Which is great for the legs.
My God.
They give us free rein to everything, and it's, you just meet people like that when you're on the road, and it makes you realize, man, they're just what Ryan said earlier, there are some truly, truly, truly great people out there, and it's amazing. It's just amazing.
Wow. Okay.
So thank you again, Steve and Gene, if you're listening. And Kurt. And Kurt Smith.
I would like that if you have the contact information from them, just tell them about the podcast, and they may sure know about the page. I'm going to mention here now.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear some testimonials from them as well. It really captures the spirit of this whole thing,
Yeah. Now, for our listeners, remember the page where you can check all the adventure. And you can contact these people, Matthew and Ryan. It's www.bikeandc.com. Bikeandc.com, continuously, no spaces. And you can see the wonderful pics. You can hear all the audio blogs in there. Read. They also have other stuff in there, not just about touring. They have information on several topics on the page, so it's worth checking. So I think this is it, guys. This has been great. Now that you mentioned that you were not carrying trash bags on your bikes, I have actually seen people making panniers out of trash cans, you know? You know, this
that guy.
Yeah, this square garbage cans that mostly for office, you know, they fit it on the side, they put some kind of globe on top. Okay, I have waterproof panniers. Check them out.
Whatever gets the job done, absolutely.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, guys, Ryan and Matthew, I really thank you for coming here and sharing your experience with all our listeners. Remember, everybody that is listening to this, remember, check the page, make comments, because this is a forum, you know, this is open to everyone. This is open to everyone. Go there, make comments, send emails. And more particularly, go and vote for a page. You know, you know, there's a small section on the right side of the page where you can see links to different sites. I'm going to feature a link to Bike and See. If you don't, if you cannot get my bad English, and you will have it in there. So you can just click and you will be on the page. Again, thank you very much for being here. We have some wonderful interviews coming our way. Remember, this Sunday starting at 6 a.m. will be the Tour of Life here in Guaynabo, Puerto Rico. I'll be there representing the bike tourists. Hopefully I will survive. Let's see, my elbow allows me to finish, but yeah, this will be like my comeback to cycling. So everybody, wish me luck for the honor of the bike, of the Tour cyclists. Okay, so now we are going to say goodbye to all the good people and stay tuned to our inter-show news that will be coming maybe tomorrow, maybe on the middle of the week. We're going to discuss some topics that we are not going to discuss here for Space Matters. Thank you very much for coming. This is Bike Tourist Podcast. My name is Gabriel, and welcome.